podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Wherever you are joining us in the world, I hope you're doing very well indeed. I hope you're looking forward to a weekend. I hope you get lots of sunshine and I hope you're not missing the footy too much. It never seems to stop. There's probably footy going on right now, to be honest with you. There's an under-21s World Cup. There's eyes on that because there's players Liverpool are getting linked with. There's endless football. But we're going to take a little bit of a break and look at one section of our squad in particular, that being the forwards. So just analyse what we expect from them as individuals next season and whether we feel like it's enough firepower to send us, hopefully, to a championship season. So to do all that, I've got Steve Evans, I've got Robbie O'Neill, and I've got Mike Bancola. We will have an insert as well for you guys listening as a podcast. A couple of weeks ago, I went and spoke to Anu Amedei, I made a mess of that, from Liverpool Lighthouse about a recent visit from Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Luis Diaz, as well as the upcoming Liverpool Gospel Music Festival in Stanley Park. All very exciting indeed. So you're going to get me and Anu in a bit. But in the meantime, let's talk about these forwards, and let's start with you, Mike. And let's start with Darwin Núñez, because he's the most contentious one, I think. He's the one with people got most extreme opinions on, I would guess. What is your opinion, extreme or otherwise, of Darwin Núñez, and do you see him kicking on next year?
I have to say, over the course of the season that's just gone, I've become a Darwin Núñez skeptic. You know, I was definitely on board, and I was the whole chaos thing, all of that jazz. I was very much in on that, and I was. He's someone I'm still willing to do well for us, but I think the coaching staff have probably found this as well, but he's much rawer than I expected him to be. And I'm kind of like, I'm at a point, I think Liverpool are at a point now where last summer and this summer, what we need is guaranteed quality. And I don't think Darwin Núñez offers that at the moment. And he's much more of a project than I would have wanted as a fan. And I feel like we're going to go on this journey with him where he eventually will contribute. But in what capacity, we don't know. Like, he was signed to be one of the three or four that starts most weeks. But now he finds himself very quickly as a fifth choice forward because he's so raw, because he's so unpolished. So I am a skeptic, but it doesn't mean I'm writing him off. I'm just unsure in terms of where we want to be next season. So we want to be a team that are competing for the league next season, competing in the Europa League, competing in the Cups if we get a good run as well. And can we afford to hone this kind of unpolished and raw striker in that context? I'm not so sure. It might be that Gakpo and Jota are relied on a bit more, Luis Diaz down the left. Mo Salah always plays. Mo Salah is Mo Salah. So I am a skeptic. And I think he could end up being in the Naby Keita role where he plays some role and he has his moments, but he's never like what we thought he was. He's not the game changer we thought he was. He's just like one of the five that contributes every now and then. Now, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that next season he starts on fire, scores five goals in five, and we're all shouting Núñez every single day, every single game. But I don't know. Like, I have become a skeptic just because he is so raw, but I'm still willing him on to do well. Like, I'm still desperate for him to do well. Like, there are rumours that he's taking the number 9 shirt from Bobby, and that those are quite some shoes to fill. And I would be happy for him to do that. And I'm really willing him to do well. It feels like he needs more time than we might be able to give him, and that's a real shame.
I mean, you don't mean to have took the shit by now. The new kit's been out 2 weeks, so I can imagine. It'll cost him a fortune, in swaps. It's happened before. You've had to take them all back and swap them, haven't they? Maybe it'll happen again. He is popular, that's the thing, Robbie, isn't he? You know, Mike's saying there about the crowd chanting his name and stuff like that. And you can't say he's not been backed by the crowd, but I'm sort of with Mike. The longer the season went on, and crucially for me, I think, the more we look like the old Liverpool, the less he seems to fit in, which is should be a bit of a worry for him.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. I think he's got all the tools, hasn't he, to be a proper, like, to be a hero. He's enthusiastic, he's quick, he's strong, he's skillful, he's got a goal in him, and he's aggressive. And I think, you know, as a fan base, that's the type of player we love. But the consistency is the key. And I think I thought he started really, really well. And then it was around the Goodison Derby last year, where I was looking at him thinking, I don't know, you know. And I know he didn't have a great game against Crystal Palace. He missed at home either. He missed a few in that game, you know, the one where Diaz cut in from the left and scored that belter.
Yeah.
So it was around that time where he started to really look quite raw. And there were a few moments in the season, I thought, where he really could have kicked on. There was like the two goals he grabbed against United. Now, if you're scoring two goals against United at home, that's a perfect opportunity as a footballer to, like, you know, to use those goals as a bit of a springboard and get some momentum behind you and really kick on. And I think for me with Nunes, what's really worried me is I just haven't seen any kind of like, not desire, but it just doesn't look like he's had the aptitude at times this season to kick on. I feel like there's other players in the squad where the manager's raving about them and training, etc. But I always feel like he's having little slight digs at Nunes. You know what I mean? And that kind of makes me worry. And there was the stuff that got mentioned about him failing to learn English, which actually is a lot harder than, you know, people give him credit for. It's not easy coming into a new country and just like picking a language up like that, particularly when your front line is so dependent on tactical instruction with pressing and stuff like that. So he's got to really, like, as you say, John, he's got to learn the ropes. And I think he's at the season now, and I do think this season's going to be make or break for him. You've got to admire his shots, but if he is requesting that Northern Ireland share, because that just shows you that he fancies himself. And he'll back himself to, you know, to fill those boots. But if you're looking at the last three or four months last season, he's got a lot of work to do.
He is backing himself, Steve, is what I would say. I saw some comments for him a month or two ago where he said, you know, at Benfica in his first season, he struggled and then he really kicked on and he expects to do so again. I won't put it past him. You know, I'm a bit of a skeptic, but at the same time, you do see how he explodes, and you do see how, because he chances seem to fall to him, and he's so in the action that he can get 30 or 40 a season, but he's got to get in the team first, and that's his first challenge.
It is, yeah. You know, I think the lads are spot on with what they said. I think, you know, I think there's an element of faith being lost in him, so to speak, towards the last end of the season, and as you said, that coincided with us playing well, which hasn't helped really. I just think he needs to bring the element of control to his game. I think. You know, he needs to learn when to press, when not to press. That's one of the things I think the manager said that he's been frustrated with. And one thing he did better towards the end of last season when he wasn't playing. Again, I think the language barrier is definitely hindering him there. I think he gets a bit too wound up. I think he needs just to take a breath sometimes. He can run himself down some alleyways and he's going nowhere. You know, he can just charge around like a bit of a headless chicken. And all that doesn't really help, you know. But you know, on the flip side of that coin, at times he was unplayable. I see, you know, he'd show bursts of like 20, 30 minutes when defenders just couldn't get near him. You know, there was games at home when he was just literally like, you know, he was causing absolute chaos for everywhere, really. And so he just needs to be able to fine-tune that, really, to get some discipline without the ball as well. You know, defensively, I think, as I said, there'll be frustration there, and that will come hopefully with a good pre-season. But also just learn to take a breath, learn to just calm things down a little bit. It doesn't always have to be 1,000 miles an hour, because, you know, he's got loads of skill. You know, he needs to work on his control and his link-up play again as well. But, you know, hopefully the manager and the coaching staff can really so to get a grip of that in the pre-season, which is coming up. It's a massive one for him. So hopefully he's been taking English lessons twice a day, and he can get to grip with what's needed in the pre-season.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you see as his best position in the front three, Mike? Or you're not too bothered? You think, you know, we've got versatile forwards and he's another one?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with him filling in as either the left forward or the centre forward. I would preferably prefer him to just be moulded as the number nine, because that's what we signed him to do. Like, the only reason he's played on the left is because of his inadequacies as number nine. But I'd much rather we just kind of just work with him to be the best number nine he can be. So I have a real preference for him playing number nine. And I think that, especially with Trent pulling into these central areas, I think him as number nine could really, really work, because Trent has shown, of all the players we have at our disposal, Trent has shown, and maybe Salah to some extent as well, actually, but those two players have really combined even well. So keeping him close to those two would be a good way to maybe get the best version of, or the best out of Darwin Nunes.
Yeah, there's a goal towards the end of the season. He comes on at Leeds, and listen, everyone scores at Leeds United in the end, but where he makes that movement, Robbie off the back, and it's actually Trent who finds him with a lovely ball. And you can see what he's got in him at times like that, really. And like Mike, you know, earlier in the season, especially him and Mo seemed to be sort of to linking up well. Would you rather be, you know, let's play him down the middle and see what we can get from him?
I think if we're going a bit more direct, yeah. I like the idea of Gakpo taking that centre slot, to be honest with you, personally, because I just think he holds the ball up really, really well and he brings people into play really well. However, if Nunes can really, like, mould himself and, you know, in terms of, like, mould his technical play a bit better and kind of ally the physical side of his game to that, there's, you know, there's room for him to be, like, a classical number nine. In like the Alan Shearer mold and the way he plays the game, because he's very up and at them. And you know, he's one of those players. He's not, there's not much finesse about him, is there? You know what I mean? It's like the balls are off, so they boom. It's like extra set, like straight to goal. So I would like to see him play at number nine, but obviously his pace is a big factor. And I know when he played against us for Benfica, he was pulling off the left a lot and he was causing some problems down the right hand side with his pace. So it's one of them. I'll be honest, John, my big worry is with him is that he just doesn't end up like another Gibril Cissé. You know what I mean? Because he's so quick and he's so strong. He's got like really good raw attributes. And I think on his day, he is unplayable. But like Mike was saying before, we need something with a bit, we can hang our ass off a bit more. And I just think he's got to learn, like he's going to have to just learn how to craft the kind of like wider facets of his technical game in order to fit in a bit.
Yeah, I think that is fair. You know, the Cissé comparison is interesting because I was thinking when we're talking about playing in wide, when we have shown forwards wide, it normally means they're on the way out. It's towards the exit, isn't it? You go from number nine towards the side, and then the next thing you know, you push them a bit further out the door. But then, like Robbie says, he's come in as someone who is a bit wide as well. So it's maybe unfair to say that, you know, he's being sort of moved out there when he's played a lot of his game there before. I don't know. People could probably tell this, and then I could completely go either way. If someone said to me he scores 8 goals next season and we sell him in the summer, I'd go, yeah, I can see that. If someone told me he scored 35 and he got player of the year, I could see that as well. He is such a sort of maverick, and we've seen both sides of him.
Definitely so. You know, I mean, there was some comparison to Luis Suarez in his first season, the amount of chances he was missing and not getting the scores. He said, I don't think they were quite fair on Luis Suarez, really, because some of the stuff he was showing was of a much higher level. You know, as I mentioned, the amount of chances he missed last season was you know, well into the 20s. The one-on-ones he was through all the time. And every time he went through, you just never quite fancied him. And if he could keep getting into those positions, you know, and start taking more of them chances, even if he takes 50% more of them chances, he's going to be up to 20, 25 goals. He still scored 15-odd goals last season, I think, was it? You know, so his numbers weren't ridiculously
bad. His numbers weren't bad, yeah.
Yeah, his numbers weren't ridiculously poor. But, you know, the amount of chances that he missed, especially some crucial times and crucial games, it just made me think that maybe he lets the pressure get to him a little bit. As I said, he snatches at things, he doesn't take a breath. You know, he just tries to do things 100 miles an hour all the time. So if he can just learn to just be a bit calmer, just be more composed when he gets these chances, you know, I can definitely see him scoring double figures, you know, high double figures, 20s next season. But as you said, I could quite easily see him going the other way as well. It's a tough one to figure out.
It's a funny one, that Steve, though, as well, because I feel like when he's through on goal, he never opens his body up. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like one of those things in a striker. When you put through one goal, you just want that second where they're going to open the body up to make the keeper think. And he just never seems to do that. He just plays so much on the edge.
I think when he's got no time to think either. So if he's got too much time to think about what he's got to do, then he can see him start to seize up and be a bit stiff. When he hasn't got no time to think, he just doesn't naturally. Then, you know, Newcastle was the prime example. Newcastle away, I had no time to think about it. It gets it down, bang, and it strikes it lovely back of the net. You know, so he just needs to be less in his own head, maybe a little bit, if I'm being a bit too deep there, I don't know.
Yeah, a bit of confidence, and we'll see where it takes him. Okay, we'll move on. Cody Gapco came in January, Mike, and at first, I was even less sure about him. I think I've gone the other way, and I think a lot of us have with Cody Gapco. We started sceptical, and then he started to show more and more. That goal against Man United doesn't the world of good, and he doesn't look back from there. And, you know, from that position, you know, the goals, the assists, his defensive play, you know, he is very much the opposite of Nunes in lots of ways, both in terms of how his short Liverpool career has gone, but also, you know, his attributes. You know, he's a lot quieter sort of on the pitch, really, but the work he's doing, I feel like is more and more impressive each time I've seen him, and I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, how he can build on that and grow next year.
Absolutely. I think I definitely went on the opposite journey to the one I went with Darwin Nunes, where when he signed, I was like, why on earth are we signing this guy? Like, we don't need him.
Yeah.
And then his first few games didn't, like, give me much hope that he was going to be an effective forward for us. I remember he played on the left a few times, and yes, he joined a dysfunctional side, but he looks really clunky, quite heavy. He looks like, it just didn't look like he would really work out. But what do I know? I mean, he's played false nine and been excellent since. And he's, you know, someone that I'm banking on next season. Like, I'm banking on him having a real breakthrough season next season where he scores, I don't know, 20 goals or something and does some good stuff for us. I think His back to goal play is really, really good and really encouraging. The way he carries the ball, the way he drives the ball, the way he can strike the ball with both feet. Like, there's so much to work with there. I also like a lot of his goals have been tap-ins.
Yeah.
So I think of Leeds away. I think of Southampton at home, away as well. I think there might have been one against United, tapping against United maybe, or just a chip against United. So a lot of his goals are goals that you can see him replicating next season. They're not like 30-yard strikes or anything like that. So yeah, he's a really encouraging player. I think also compared to Nunes, he's got more poise. Like this, he doesn't seem like he's emotionally immature. Like you wouldn't see him getting sent off for a headbutt. You know,
Too cool.
he's too cool. He's got the Virgil vibe of like too cool for school kind of thing. So I really like him. And I think whenever I've consumed the content, like social media content or like the YouTube content with like the club and he's involved, he seems to be a fairly popular player within the dressing room. Like he struck up a good relationship with Costas, I think. You know, he struck up a good relationship with obviously Virgil, and him and Virgil hang out quite a bit. So that's all good, and that says to me that we've not only signed a good player but a good character. So I'm really, really hoping that you know he's someone that we see kick on next season. And you know, if you were to guess who's going to start against Chelsea at home, I mean, Chelsea away, sorry, to start the season, I think most of us would say Cody Gakpo starts as the number nine, which says a lot about what the impact he's had since he signed in January. So yeah, let's see what Cody Gakpo will offer us next season, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's almost an apt to start in that game, Robbie. I mean, we have not even started preseason yet. We'll see, but I think, you know, if he is fit and looking ready, I think he does start in that game because partly because the manager seems to really, really like him, and you know, he's talked him up quite a bit in terms of what he's brought to the team already, and I think they've been really impressed with how quickly he's adapted to what the manager wants.
Yeah, he's in many ways he's the antithesis to Nunes and how because he like. You said before about how he can, it's like he likes to play on the edge and maybe he gets in his own head, but Gakpo's so cerebral. Like, it's just like you can just see the thoughts, you can see every touch he takes. It's like I love watching him, I absolutely love watching him. He's just like Mike. I was a bit surprised we signed him because I know there was a lot of stuff about Man United being in for him at that time, weren't there? And it looked for a while that was a done deal and that they were going to take him, but we snuck in. I think that I would prefer him to be in that number nine spot, simply because of how he brings others into play. And I feel like if we're going to get, if I mean, I know we're slightly changing how we're playing now. Well, I mean, we did towards the back end of last season, so who knows what the system's going to be like. But if we are going to play a 4-3-3, for instance, I just think you can do. You know, I think our best bet is playing him as a nine or as a false one because. He drops deep, and when he drops deep, he brings others into play. Like you said before, if we are in possession and we are building and we can move, he's clever enough with his movements to be at the back post or even at the front post to not, you know, to put one in with like with one touch. I just think he's going to be for Liverpool now moving forwards. As we know, the team's in transition, and I think the front line very much so is in transition, and a lot of the success we've had over the last 10 years, I feel, has been. As a consequence of how we've basically just built around Firmino. You know, he hasn't been front and centre, and he hasn't been the main man at any given time, really. Even though he's so charismatic and we love him, but he does the graft. He did the graft a lot of the time for the others, and he was picking the passes, and then he'd chip in with important goals. And I think with Gakpo, you're going to see a bit more of that, but you're probably just going to get a bit more physicality on top of it as well. So yeah, I think he's a shoo-in.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with what the boys have said, Stian, that he's got this really nice combination of playing the false nine role and doing everything involved in that, the work rate, the bringing people in. But like Mike says, being there for the tap-ins as well is great because sometimes, you know, you can always end up being too selfish in that role or too unselfish, sorry, in that role really where you're looking around you and trying to get other people into play, then you forget to get on things the end of yourself. Sometimes we'd see it with Bobby, and you know, he'd go 9-10 games without scoring. With Cody, you don't really think he's going to do that. You'd expect him to always chip in because he does get to the back post really well.
He does, and I think that's one of the things that surprised me more than anything, really, is how well he moves about the pitch and his ability to find the right space at the right time. You know, I was actually very impressed with the World Cup and was quite happy when we signed him, really, because I did think he would add a lot to the team. I think his first couple of games, until he got the gist of what the manager was asking him to do and the coaches, I think he looked a little bit lost at times, but then he picked things up really quickly. That must be a massive boost for the managers and the coaches to see a player who comes and take things on board like so quickly, almost opposite to what Darwin Núñez, as we mentioned before, really. You know, it's a coach's dream for someone who picks things up. He's a very intelligent lad, you know, with the way he speaks, you know, that sort of transmits onto his football as well. He's a really intelligent player. I like the way he's quite physical. He's not scared to put himself about, get stuck in, throw the boot in now and then. You know, it's a really good asset to have, while also being, you know, having, he's good on a half turn. He's got great close control. You know, big lad as well. You know, he's really got potential to kick on again next season and be a really real big asset for this team. I think he's one I've been looking at to get. You know, I think all in all, he got over 20 goals last season, including his time in Holland as well. So I wouldn't be going betting against him to get their numbers again next season for us if he, you know, he continues to listen to what the coaches want from him and performs on the pitch. I think he'd be decent.
Yeah, absolutely. Bringing in a few comments here. Ronnie Hot Dogs on Fave says Gakpo is such a good ball carrier, technically so sound. I definitely agree with that. Steve Davis said Gakpo wasn't sure what question he was the answer to, but as soon as he settled, you could see his quality really shining through. And then the dude is worried about me feeling the heat turn the aircon on. That's Las Vegas sunburn. That's not through here. The temperature in here is perfectly fine. I just didn't put me some cream on well enough. I lubricated myself well enough, but didn't protect myself well enough. So that's the way it is. I lubricated.
Can see the Budweiser dripping out your pores, Doug.
Absolutely. But we all had a good time, and that is the main thing. Not hot, just burnt. Okay, Luis Diaz, start with you again, Mike. It's a bit of a lost season for him because of that impact injury, but when you actually look at the goals he scored, you know, there's a lot of good ones, and you sense a bit of development, you know, in his play. He comes in 18 months ago now with no, you know, pre-season. He comes in January. You see his qualities, but he's just playing his own game, really. I felt like last season he was a massive miss for us because he was starting to see, you know, a slightly different one. I love the goal he scores against Bournemouth. It's an old-fashioned centre-forward header, isn't it? He's getting into the centre. I think he's become a bit of a forgotten man, I'll be honest with you. And I think, you know, with a good pre-season ahead of him, I think he could really explode next year and could be, you know, one who, you know, maybe, you know, could have a huge impact for us. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I actually think we were seeing an evolution in some sense of Luis Diaz. I think when he signed, he was very much an enigma. He wasn't someone that, you know, really, he came in and made a huge impact, obviously, as we traced to quadruple and almost get over the line there. But like he hadn't had a preseason with us, so he was still getting used to how we play. And I think that the start of last season, the season just gone, we saw him doing some of the things that we have seen our forwards do in years gone by. I mean, the two goals he scores against Bournemouth are both headed goals. Those are goals that you would see Sadio Mane score for us regularly.
Yeah.
Two headers, you know, leaping in the middle of the goal, pretty much scoring headers. That's literally Mane would do that all the time to open a goal scoring for us in games. And I think the question for Luis Diaz is, can he do that more regularly? So I think no one doubts the guy's quality. The quality is evident for anyone with a pair of eyes. He's undeniably a very good footballer. The question with him has always been his output. And I think we were seeing signs towards the start of last season that the output could be where we need it to be. I think he scored two headers against Bournemouth. He scored a goal against Palace. And there's another goal. I think he scored four goals. So there's definitely something there with Luis Diaz. I think the question for him really is the output, because I think the quality is there. I'm excited by him. He's someone that I'm really like fully in support of in terms of like his quality. There's no doubt about his quality for me. I just hope that, because I think for us, the goal scoring onus is pretty much on Salah in terms of he's our most reliable goal scorer. So we know going into next season, if all things go well, Salah will score 30 goals or comps again. That's just what he does.
Yeah.
But I think with the other forwards, we know their quality. I think Jota's maybe a guarantee of 20 goals a season. But with Gakpo, Nunes and Diaz, who knows what the output's going to be? We really don't know where those players are going to fall. It could be that Gakpo scores 10 goals but has an amazing season still because his performance level is so high. It could be that Nunes scores 30 goals, but it could be that Diaz scores 10 goals. We literally don't know. So those players really could, in many ways, explode and surprise us. And I think Diaz literally has showed the signs, even for Colombia in this midweek. I can't believe they're still playing football, by the way. It's absolutely crazy. But for Colombia, he scored a header against Germany. You know, in the middle of the box, ball comes in, he scores a header. So yeah, I'm fully confident Diaz is going to contribute for us massively next season, and I can't wait to see him play more regularly for us next season.
You Diaz fan, Robbie?
Yes, massive. I think one of the ills of last season was just him being absent. I think we lost Mane, and one of the things we lost with Mane was a controlled aggression in our front line. You know, we could say we want about how brilliant Salah is, but I just think there's a lot of grace to how Salah plays the game. But I think with Mane, he's so aggressive, but he's just found a way to kind of like channel that aggression in the most positive way, and put that both through his kind of his numbers and also how he presses. And I think Diaz is the same. I always remember not last season, but the season before, the one all at Anfield, and I just remember like being like seeing him. I think it might have been one of the first times I'd seen him that season, and I just remember just being kind of like overawed by how brave the lad was. You know, there's no shaking with him. It's just everything. He's there. It's 50-50. It's his ball. And I think for someone who's actually quite slight, it's a bit of a misnomer. You're not really like expecting that of him. But I think if he was a bit of a victim by the looks of it, to kind of like some of the I know there was no club doctor and stuff like that for large parts of last season. And in the end, you know, he comes back and gets injured, and it looks like, you know, maybe that is a consequence of that. Who knows? But I think he was a massive miss. Sorry, they dropped my laptop there. Fucking hell, there. I think he was a massive miss, and I just think if we can get him into a bit of a rhythm this season, I think we can expect a lot of him. I do take Mike's point though on the output, because I think although he was missing, it's kind of like how involved do you want to be? Because I think sometimes he seems to be quite far away from goal. Do you know what I mean? It's like. And I think in the same way we talked about Salah at times last season, when we were talking about why is Mo so far away from goal, I feel like when we did see Diaz, it was a similar thing. It was kind of like some of the goals he did score, I know he scored those few headers, but talk about that goal against Palace last season. He literally had to slalom from the byline to like 18 yards, just outside of the left-hand post to curl it in. And it's kind of like stuff like that. He's not going to be able to do that every game. So I think tactically, we just need to find a way to get him a bit further up the pitch and a bit more inside at times. But that might be helped by a change in formation. I think there's a lot of variables. And as you say, it was a written off season. And he's only really had 6 full months, hasn't he, as a Liverpool player in terms of like availability. So got to give him the benefit of the doubt, give him a pre-season. I'm sure this season coming, he'll just be on fire.
Yeah, and I think what this manager and coaching staff have been able to do, Steve, is to take these forwards who've obviously got a lot of talent and take them up another level. And, you know, Manny was never this prolific forward. He was streaky and, you know, come to Liverpool and went up another level. You know, even Mo, he has that great year at Roma, but the numbers he's posted since are another level. And they've talked a lot, the forwards in the past, about the manager drilling into them and the coaches, the importance of getting between the sticks. And you feel like that's what they'll be telling him, you know, this summer. And I would be surprised again if all those output questions, which I understand, but the history when we're doing this show in 12 months.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised at the output questions, if I'm honest with you. I think the things that we saw from him in his first sort of half season when he came in January showed me plenty that he can more than hit 15, 16 Premier League goals a season. I know as Mike said before, if Mo's in his usual 30 goals a season and the rest of the ship him with 15, 16 goals, that's going to be more than enough for us. That's exactly what we need. I think the goals need to be spread around as much as possible. My only criticism of him in the past is, like you said, I think he needs to be, definitely needs to be closer to the goal sometimes. I think he drops a little bit too deep. But, you know, I was gutted when he got injured last season against Arsenal, because I just think he gives us so much balance in the side, with Salah on one side, him on the other. And whoever go through the middle, whether it be Gakpo or whether it be Nunes or Jota, I just think that balance looks so much better that way. He managed to make the pitch a lot bigger, gives a chance for midfielders to get forward and just break the lines as well. So, you know, losing him last season was a massive blow for sure, and I'm expecting him to really kick on next season. You know, he's certainly one of the players, or one of the few players in the team, who can create something out of nothing for me as well, which is something that really important at times when games are really tight, as we saw when he popped up with them reportedly equalising goals against like Tottenham, against the Palace a couple of seasons ago. So yeah, a fully fit Ferran Diaz next season is going to be a massive asset.
Ty Bradley says, don't worry, we have dope guys. We're coming on to him. Don't worry, we are coming into it, but we're going to have a little bit of a break now. Give the guys on the call a little bit of a breather. You're going to hear me talking to Andy from Liverpool Lighthouse now about a recent visit, as I say, from a couple of Liverpool stars, one of whom we've just discussed there, Luis Diaz, who's good on the drums as well as good at the scoring goals. Also promoting this upcoming Liverpool Gospel Music Festival, the first one in this country in Stanley Park in September. So here is me talking to Andy. Hope you enjoy. It is John Gibbons, and I'm out and about, which is very exciting. And we're up at Anfield, which is nice. The season might have finished, but we are here today at the Liverpool Lighthouse. And people might have seen the building going to the match when they walk past, but might not be fully aware of everything that is going on here. And so I thought we'd come up today to find out a little bit more about the Lighthouse itself, and also looking ahead to a huge gospel festival that's going to be happening in Liverpool. And to tell us all about that, I have Anu. Anu, thank you so much for welcoming me and for a cup of coffee this morning as well.
Thank you so much for having me. And, I actually didn't make the coffee, but thank you.
Well, you provided it, I do appreciate that. Now, Anu, you've been very welcoming this morning. You've been very nice, but it is fair to say that I'm not the biggest visitor you've had in the last few months. I think you've had more exciting people in than me recently. I think it's fair to say. Tell us about that first of all, because people might have seen the video and might have seen the video you guys did with Vista for the Lighthouse. But tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, so first of all, you are very nice and important. Let's just get that straight. But yes, we had Ox in and Luis Diaz, and it was phenomenal. So they came in to support the work that the Lighthouse does around music, and in particular with regard to the Liverpool Gospel Music Festival that's happening in September on the 9th at Stanley Park, which, as you know, is right behind at the stadium. But I had to keep that secret about them coming in for about 6 weeks. I was only able to tell like one or two people. So I was holding it, bursting at the seams. I was like, oh my God, are they going to show? Is it going to be good? Is it going to work? Is it going to be great? And when the day came, it was phenomenal. It just exceeded all my expectations. So they came in, we got them to look at the choirs that were singing. So I've got two choirs that run from Liverpool Lighthouse. We've got the Lighthouse Choir, which is a wonderful outreach choir and just spreading hope and joy and happiness. And we've got the Gospel Choir as well, Love and Joy. So they came together to sing. And then what happened was when the guys came in, they sort of snuck upstairs at the back, and the choirs were together and they were singing, and then the fans walked down the stairs, and it was just crazy because whilst they were singing, Ox just sat by one of our choir members, and she was like, I could see her face, she was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But she was quite good. She kept on singing.
Didn't miss a beat. Didn't miss a beat.
She did. So proud. But a couple of the members couldn't help it. They were just up, and they were like, you know, there were tears, there was joy. It was an incredible day. And the players also visited the kids because we work with a lot of children as well in the community. We do lots in the community. We have ESOL classes. We have a food pantry. We have well-being activities like drama and singing. But they came to visit the kids. And it was magical. You've got to go and watch it. Go watch it, because it was just wonderful to see the surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll encourage everyone to watch the video that Liverpool did with you guys and Vista, obviously, as well. And because the players just seemed to love it, which is something that I got from it as well. Obviously, it was great to see like the reaction and to see all the talented people that you have here coming together and under this roof to create music. But also, for me, watching the players, they just seem to get... They obviously love music, but they seem to get so much out of it as well.
Do you know what? I'm so glad about that, because they were wonderful. They really, really were. And I'm not just saying that. They were genuinely great. Ox was really cool. When I suggested, oh, why don't you play the drums? Because I knew that he had a bit of a musical background. He was like, oh, my God. I could see that on his face.
Right, I'm not rehearsed this.
And I was just like, it's easy. All you need to do is and he was just like, what? And so the other drummer sort of took him through, and he was really focused like a few watches, really, really focused. And then he goes, and he does it at the end. And you can tell he was just like, yeah. And there's a little bit on the clip where it goes, where Diaz says, that wasn't easy, that's difficult, isn't it? He's like, yeah, that was difficult. And Diaz was cool as well. It was really nice to have some Portuguese members in the choir. So they were having good banter and just our communication and rapport generally. It was a lovely day. Honest to God, I'm going to say this, and this is true. It was one of the best days in my entire professional career.
Oh,
honest to God, like seriously, hands down.
So when the video comes out then, how much of a boost does it give for you guys? Because you're working here every day, you're doing brilliant things in your community, but obviously, you know, only so many people are aware of maybe what you do. So when a video like that comes out, you know, what does it mean for you guys to be able to show the whole world, because Liverpool's got a global fan base, you know, the work that you're doing day in, day out?
Honestly, you couldn't pay for that. Like, that's the way that we saw it, that you just, like, you couldn't pay for this. Like, it was a dream. It was a dream just to have that kind of amplification and for other people to be able to see, oh my gosh, this is what they do here and this is how it is. And just the impact has been phenomenal. I mean, on just the actual building and everything that we do here, and just people knowing and wanting to engage in one way or another. Lots of people want to sing, or they want to bring their kids, or they want to engage. And that's really cool. That's what we're here for. We're here to serve the community. So to be able to let the community know what we do was unparalleled. And then in terms of the festival, just like people being able to come in and tickets are selling, you know, because we've tried to keep it really, really low because we're a small charity.
Yeah.
So we don't have the funds necessarily to do it without help. We've raised a lot of money, but we did have to have, you know, tickets at what we hope is a very, very affordable price. And we've got a really good deal as well. But they started to sell. And we're just like, oh, that's amazing. And just, as I said, you couldn't pay for that.
So let's talk a little bit more about the festival. Leads us on nicely. It's in September. Like you said, it's in Stanley Park, which is, again, just a stone's throw from here. The other side of Anfield Stadium. You must be really looking forward to it. It's a phenomenal lineup, and it's quite a unique thing for the UK as well, isn't it, that we have here in Liverpool?
That's right. I mean, so we're calling it the first mainstream gospel music festival because we all have listened to gospel in one way or another, even if you think you haven't. So a lot of your favourite pop artists will have gospel musicians behind them, or gospel singers, or gospel influences. So we hear it. And we actually in the industry think that like 60 to 70% of the stuff you hear in the pop world has got gospel influences in it one way or another. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. But you never really get to hear the actual music on its own, on it with a platform, you know, just celebrated as a genre. It doesn't matter what you believe in, or if you have no beliefs at all, or where you come from, or your background. It doesn't matter. Just come and enjoy the music for the music. And just to have an opportunity and a platform to do that is really exciting, and we've had so much incredible feedback and excitement about it, and so yeah, we're excited too.
And you can see the excitement sort of bursting out of you, and because you guys will know the talent that you've got there, but also I'm sure lots of other things planned. It's going to be a fantastic family day.
Exactly that. Thank you so much. It's going to be a fun day out for the family. Bring your kids, bring your granny, bring everybody. I really mean it. You've got like the Kingdom Choir. You've got amazing artists like choirs and individual artists. The thing about gospel music is it covers everything. We think about the choirs, but it's got like soul artists that sing gospel, R&B, you know, a bit of hip hop and Afro beats. It just covers so much of what you would actually listen to as a popular genre. It's just tailored within the gospel form of music. So just come out and enjoy it for everybody. There'll be something for everybody.
Something for everybody, and come down. And tickets available now, you said, as
tickets
well.
Are available now from the website. Go get them. We hope they're really, decent value for money. So it's £5 for an individual ticket. But if you're bringing five people, it's £15 for five people. So we really, really wanted everybody to try and come. So please do.
Definitely bring your granny then. It's good value. The more the merrier. Grab your granny, get down there and enjoy it. But I mean, it's a huge amount of work though to pull something together, especially on top of everything that you're doing here. Yeah. So you must be kind of like always begging for extra hours in the day sometimes. But I guess it's going to be worth it when the sun's shining in Stanley Park and there's people enjoying this fantastic music and, you know, often maybe, like you say, for the first time, introducing them to things and sounds that, as you say, they've heard before, but maybe not in that setting.
Exactly that. I feel like you're reading my life. I'm like, has he got cameras? Because, yes, it's a lot to squash all of that in. But it's so worth it. It's an underrepresented form of music, and it's a joyful form of music. So it is worth it. It's worth it. I mean, when you come out, just think about how you feel when you hear that, you know, this big choir sounds. You walk out and you just feel like you're levitating. You feel like you're lifted high and you're flying out of the park. So
I do. I feel like I'm levitating just talking to you, honestly. So God knows how I will feel on the day. Thank you so much for inviting us down. I was saying before, it's been a while since I've been in the building, but I think it's really nice for next time people come to the game and they walk past the Liverpool Lighthouse, they'll be like, that's where that wonderful woman Annie works, and that's where we saw Ox on the drums and all the fantastic work that they do. So people know a little bit more about you now, and if they want to come in and support you,
yes,
then they'd
please.
Be welcome.
Very much so. Come in and you know, if you're in need, come in. We really are here for the community. So please, 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 if you need things or what have you, come in and make good use of us. But also, if you're far away, because we know this is a global reach and you can't get here, you can always go onto the festival page and donate, because we also need your donations too. So come and support.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Thanks to Vista for putting us together. And yeah, it's been lovely. I'm going to levitate out of the boy back to the office.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, we are back. We are live. That was very short. If you are listening as a podcast, I hope you enjoy it. Annie has got one of those personalities that just, I don't know, gets inside you and lifts you up. I bounced back to the office after speaking to her. I was in the car, but honestly, I could have flew down Breck Road into the office. She's just one of those people who makes you feel great. Afterwards, she was saying, you've got such a great sounding voice. I bet you're a good singer. Come and join the choir. And I was nearly signing up. I'll be honest with you. She is one of those people. I hope the Liverpool Gospel Music Festival is a huge success. I'm sure it will be. If you want to get down, we gave you all the details in there as well. It is in September. And yeah, nice one to Vista for hooking us up as well. Okay, we'll move on. Who are we up to? Mo Salah. Yesterday, we celebrated 6 years of Mo Salah. I'll start with you, Steve, on this one. He's been a fantastic player for Liverpool. You know, we did it all yesterday. You know, the nights we've had with him, the trophies we've won, the goals he scored. But what are you expecting of him next year? And what do you expect about in the future? There was a shout in the comments, would you accept £100 million for him? Now, I wouldn't, largely just because I want to watch him play. But I'm not really in it for the money in the bank. But I also think there's so much more for him to come. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can say, put something off your all the money in the world, but how are you going to replace 30 goals a season, which he's done for the last six seasons? It's a massive ask to bring a player who's going to do that. And I think it would be crazy for us to do so, even if the offer came in. But you know, Mo's had a bit of an indifferent season last season. I think some of the formation changes didn't quite help him. Again, he was probably a little bit further away from goal than usual. And you know, the numbers still came and the goals still came, but I still think there was times when he looked a little bit frustrated, should we say, with where he was on the football pitch and where he was receiving the ball. Obviously, Trent not being where he was usually as well, because you know that didn't help him. But you know, Mo's Mo, and Mo will always pop up with the goods. And I'm expecting him to go again next season. He will be as frustrated as anyone to miss out on trophies and especially the Champions League last season, as we know from his tweets. So he will be working his ass off in the summer, as we know. He's not in bad nick anyway, to be fair, is he? So it depresses me when I see pictures on with his top off. I need to get down to the gym. So, but yeah, I think Mo just needs to keep doing what he's doing. At times, I think he can be a little predictable with some of the stuff he does, but I don't know, this cuts inside. He likes to try and kill on the top corner. He needs one of them to go in for me soon, because he's been trying it a lot last season and not as sailing to the top corner as of yet for a while. But you know, Mo will kick on again, as I said, and I'm expecting high double figures, high 20s, probably 30 again from him if this Liverpool team is firing to score as many goals as he did last season. In a team that wasn't playing very well is an unbelievable achievement for me. So Mo, he will deliver. He always delivers.
And that's the thing for me, Robbie, is that he does always deliver. And that's why, you know, I won't be taking the cash, even if it is on the table. I don't know, because, you know, there's so many question marks about the other forwards. You know, even the one we're going to come on to, Diogo Jota, you know, after his injuries last season, you know, what player are we getting from him next year? You know, we've talked about, you know, the others in terms of, you know, Luis Diaz, you know, Darwin Nunes, there is And no matter how talented they are, there's still sorts of question marks. Cody Gapko's only just come. Where is Mo? You just absolutely know what you're going to get from him, and that's goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if he were to lose him, I just don't think you could underestimate the psychological like damage it'll do to that side and the fan base. I think we've been here before with our best players, where silly amounts of money have come in, we've lost them, and we've gone into a bit of a free fall. You know what I mean? And you know, I think we've got to be learning from things like that. And I'm sure the board will be looking at it and go, there's going to be a time and a place for Mo Salah to leave Liverpool Football Club. There's no doubt about that. You know, the front three of which he was part is now broken up, and he's the only one left. So there's going to come a time where he goes, but this is not the time to take any amount of money in the world for him. We need consistency, we need goals, and he's the only one of all of them who is consistently available. And he's probably, you know, what was it, 30 goals last season as well? It was 30 goals, and in a season where he wasn't by any means anywhere near his best for long swaths of it. So I just think having players like that who not only are skillful but are just obsessed with winning. When that Instagram post came out, when that tweet came out at the end of the season, I was made up. I was absolutely made up. And I thought it was telling that it came from him, actually. There were certain players in the team that I thought might have said something like that. But it was only really when Van Dijk that kind of like said, nah, not acceptable. Yeah. And it wasn't acceptable. You know, we all love that team, and that team will give us some great memories, but there was a lot of things that went down last season, and I'm sure they're not happy about it, and I'm sure they want to put it right. And I think having Salah in there, not just from a numbers perspective, but just from a mental perspective, it's going to serve us great in the coming 12 months. So, I hope to God he stays.
I'm sure he will. You know, I'm sure it's just chat. He seems to really love Liverpool as well, Mike, is what you'd say. He had his chance to move on if he wanted to, you know, with the contract he signed up. And I don't see anyone in that squad more committed than Mo Salah to firing us back to where we want to be.
Yeah, I think he very much is one of us now. And that's how I see him. You know, like, he loves his club. And I think about what he's achieved so far at the club. He's got 186 goals for us. So by the end of next season, we're probably going to be speaking about a player that scored over 200 goals for this club. So he's a bona fide legend already. And I think he is a player that has a drive and an appetite for records. But I think he has an appetite for records with this club, with us. He enjoys making us, his fans, happy. I mean, sometimes where he just stares at us when he scored a goal, like, just almost, you guys are so, he's just staring at us like, you guys are so mad, but I love you for it. You know, he loves us and we love him. And I fully expect us to be talking about another excellent Mo Salah season. I'm sure there are going to be so many moments where he's made us smile again. He's made us jump and scream and shout again. And, you know, he is going to go down as one of our most reliably, consistently great players. Like, we've had loads of great players, but some of them have, you know, burnt for shorter periods. So Fernando Torres, for example, a great example here. He's someone that, well, depending on how you feel about how he left the club, I've kind of made peace of it at this point now, but I know some people saw bitterness. But Fernando Torres was good for about 3 years for Liverpool. Salah's been great for 6 years. That's mm-hmm. the difference. We're talking about a player that's been great for 6 years, 7 years, hopefully 8 years. So we're talking about consistent greatness. So he is right up there with any great you can think of at his club, right up there with your Dalglishes, your Gerrards, all of those players who were great for long periods. And I'm looking forward to hopefully another historic season next season.
Absolutely, absolutely. More to come from Mo. But more, is there more to come from Diogo Jota? That is the question. State, I'll go to you first. He finishes strong. He gets 7 goals last season. They're all after the 17th of April, which is sort of quite something, very rare. But it just shows those injury problems that he had earlier in the season. Do you expect him to carry on as he finished? You know, he gets a brace on the last day. Do you expect him to carry on, or is he one where you're going to have a particularly close eye on in pre-season to see how sharp he's looking?
No, I expect he will have. He will do a bit of work close season as well, because I think when he first came back after his injury at the end of last season, he looked very, very sluggish. Looked like you could tell he'd been off the pit. You know, hadn't been playing for a long time, and you know, Jota could be one of them players you can't see all game, and then they pop up and score 2 goals for you. He's that little again. He's a player that we haven't got in the team apart from him. He will ghost in and score some goals for you after not having the best of games. So. I think he'll be doing a lot of physical work in the summer. I think he'll be trying to keep himself sharp, because I think he will want to hit the ground running early doors with this season. And that's only going to benefit Liverpool, of course. And I think, again, if the ball's going to fall to any of our forwards in a box, I want it to be Diogo Jota, because it's it's like the first time instinctive finish that he will always seem to bury for me. You know, I like the lad a lot. I think there's certain games when he definitely suits our style of playing. And there'll be certain games when I think there's other players that must be just, you know, playing more of a tight game. So, yeah, he's a valuable member of the squad for me, and he will be working hard, as I said, close season and pre-season to come out all guns blazing at the start of next season. And I think he will. I think he'll be a high end scoring chance again.
What do you think, Robbie?
When we signed him, I remember listening to an interview with a Wolves fan, and that Wolves fan said he's a very streaky player. And the first season he had, he was on fire, and there was no sign of it like being streaky whatsoever. It was just consistent goals, consistent assists, consistent hard work. But I think since then, he has lulled into, you know, I don't know, he has had his injury problems, but I think there is a streakiest, like there's something about him which is quite streaky. And I think the little run he goes on the back end of the last season's case in point. I think he's a good player. I think he's a good squad player, like Steve says. But I think we can say him with Jota long term is he good enough to be a starter for Liverpool week in, week out? I don't know if he is, if I'm honest. I think he's a good player to have in the squad, but I just don't know if he's kind of like someone we can really build around. I think he's got skills, and I think those skills are valuable. And I think as we see, he pops up with important goals all the time. But for me personally, if I was picking our first, like first, if someone said to me, pick a front three for Liverpool, I don't think he'd be in it. But he'd probably be the first sub to bring on every single time, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I think as a fan base and even as a club, we probably just kind of like maybe manage our expectations about what we want from him. And I think that actually, like I've said, but ages ago, I was on the gutter around Christmas and I mentioned to Rob Gutman at the time, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point Liverpool sell him if the offer's right. Now, I'm not saying sell him, but if he's not going to be a starter week in, week out, but he is of value, you look through that squad and you're looking at players like who are going to be able to make a few quid and maybe like you can then invest elsewhere. I think he might be one of them. Now, as I say, I don't think we should sell him, but for me, long term, I don't think he's like an automatic starter. And I think he's been at the club for 3 years now, is it? And injuries aside, I think that we should be at the point now where we can make that opinion on him. You know, he is one of our, he's a lad we can hang our hat off, but it's just somewhere he's going to be there or thereabouts. So I think we should keep him around, and I think he'll do well whenever he plays because he's a good player. But for me, I'm not as enamoured by him as some are, to be honest with you.
Whether he's a guaranteed starter or a good squad player, though, Mike, you know, both are needed. And if he ends up being fourth or fifth choice through the others playing really well, then that's a good position. And I always like having him on the bench. You know, I'm happy for him to start as well because he gets big goals. And, you know, Neil often talks about him getting a lot of opening goals when you look at the stats. But he always feels good off the bench to me. You know, if we're struggling a game and Jota comes on, I'm always confident that he can make an impact. And, you know, we're going to need all these players next season with all these all 400 Europa League games.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm actually so convinced by Jota because I think we have to remember what he did in the season where we almost won the quadruple. I think for the first, up until February that season, apart from Salah, he's the forward we're relying on the most. I think people forget because of the way Mane ends the season that he actually has a really poor start to that season.
Yeah.
And it's really only from about January onwards when he comes back from AFCON where he really enters like this really high level and plays number nine and does really well. But when we're looking for a goal in that period from, you know, August to February, it's very often Diogo Jota that scores a goal. I think of the Arsenal game in the League Cup. I think of, you know, so many games that he just scored the opening goal. It was a scruffy head or something. He'd always be the one that's scoring the goal. And he's the one, I think, that's of our forwards not named Mohamed Salah, he's the one I'm the most sure about in terms of what he is. Jota scores goals. That's simple. He has clear technical deficiencies. His link-up play is not great, but he scores goals. And I think he showed that towards the back end of last season. I mean, last season, you said he scored his first goal in April and he ends up with seven.
Yeah.
Diogo Jota scores goals. It's very like, and I think we need to kind of move past the idea of Liverpool having this set front three. It's never going to be like the Salah, Firmino, Mane era ever again. I think we're going to have periods where Diaz starts six or seven games and does really, really well. But maybe Jota comes in and scores and then he can't lose the spot and he starts games and maybe Gakpo's on the bench as a result. Like, they're all going to have their moments, I think, and we're going to end up in a position, hopefully, where by the end of the season, we've achieved a lot and we can look at all five of our forwards and say they've all, you know, played a massive role in our success.
Okay, we'll move on to a sixth one then. All the sixth options, and I'll start, you know, with you, Steve, because Ben Doak we saw flashes of towards the middle of the season, and he was really impressive. And then, you know, he sort of stopped getting his opportunities toward the end of the season, which can happen. You know, managers go for more short things and things like that. I think he picked up one or two injuries as well. Yeah, there's Kate Gordon to come back as well, or there's maybe a wild card, someone who the manager's not even looking at. If they don't buy anyone, you know, do you see games or minutes for Ben Doak, you know, in particular? And would you be pleased to see a little bit more from him from what you've seen so far?
Very much, yeah. I just thought the glimpses that we saw of him last season, I thought were very, very encouraging. I thought he looked very young, obviously, but hungry, quick, quite strong and physical for a small lad as well. But, you know, just someone who's really direct with the ball, running at defenders and really didn't look overawed by the occasion. Certainly, the stuff that we saw of him made me think that if he can kick on again, that we might have a real player in our hands. I see a couple of things on Twitter saying that he was picked for the Scotland number 21 side but declined it because he wanted to go back to Liverpool to train, to get fit again for the season, because I think he knows this is going to be a sort of a breakthrough, potentially be a breakthrough season for him. He's very exciting, the stuff that I saw, you know, the glimpses that I saw of him for the Liverpool youth teams as well give me massive encouragement. You know, if he can bring that sort of form to the first team with the limited chances he gets, you know, maybe some of the Europa League games, if we, you know, some of the teams are getting that, he might get a chance the early rounds of the League Cup again. But coming off the bench, and Mo Salah, as we said, not getting any younger, and we haven't really got anyone else to give competition for that right-hand side at all, really, you know. So Ben Doak certainly does excite me if he can come on and take his chance. Katie Gordon obviously needs to kick off the injury. He was missing for the whole last season, really, unfortunately for him. I'm not too sure what the issue was, but there was obviously high hope for him as well. So at least you've got two young lads shopping a bit there to prove themselves in that position if they get a chance next season.
Would you be happy with them as sort of sixth choice between them, Robbie, or do you think we should be going in with one more who's a bit more established?
I think when you look at like the other areas of the squads, what we've got to look at, you know, we still got to bring a couple of at least one or two in midfield and then with defence. I think it's just the perfect time to actually see where the lay of the land is with these young lads, because let's get it right, next summer there's probably going to have to be some surgery up the top of the pitch. It's an ongoing thing, isn't it? And if you're the club at the minute, you're probably thinking, oh, well, we've got these two lads who are Gordon and Doak, who are both very talented. They're both coming back off injuries. And then there's other lads in the, you know, there's going to be other lads in the youth teams that are going to be looking. I know, is it Musiala's going? Not Musiala, the Polish, I don't know how to say his name, but
I think you're pretty Polish close kid. There, to be fair. Yeah.
He's gone. I felt like I was saying the name of the kid he plays with Germany. but yeah, he's just gone out on loan, hasn't he? So, or he's looking, well,
I think he's completely gone. Obviously,
has he gone?
Yeah. Cavallo's gone on, looks like he's going on loan to Leipzig.
And I just think it's going to be a case where the club are going, okay, we've got two really talented players here. Let's give them a game here and there. Let's see where they land, because it's one of them. There is a question mark around Nunes still, in particular, and I think there's going to be injuries that we've seen that all of the players up top, with the exception of Salah, seem to be that, and Gakpo, touch wood so far, seem to be relatively prone to injuries. So it's kind of good to have them around. It's not just what they do on the pitch, though, is it? It's about what they do in training and having them around in training. And if they're making an impression there and working hard and learning from those lads, if they do go out on injuries, they know the jobs they have to do. So it's easy for them to, not easy, but it's easier for them to fill in. And with that enthusiasm that they've got with being young, I just think this is going to be a good season for the pair of them to get a few minutes, yeah.
David here saying, Mike, hoping this can be Ben Doak's breakout season. He certainly looks confident when he has took the pitch, and that's the first battle for a young player, isn't he? We've seen young players, you know, shrink when they came onto Anfield. He seemed to grow, you know, whenever he came on, he was like, you know, watch me, what I can do, and he'll need that confidence for sure.
Yeah, I think a good sign of a quality young player is that kind of swagger, and sometimes you just see a moment. It might just be like a run they make, but it's a bit of a swagger about it. And he's got something about him, Ben Doak. I saw when Trent first broke through as well. I'm not saying, look, I don't know if he's going to be as special as Trent is, but they have this kind of aura, this confidence about them that I'm quite drawn to. So Ben Doak's someone that interests me. I'm not someone that watches youth football at all religiously. I used to be one of those that would watch every single youth game. I was on the Jordan Rossiter train. I was hyping him up, and the Jonjo Sharvey train when he was there, and Andre Riz and all of those guys. I watched a lot of that, but I've kind of watched less of that now. So there's something about Ben Doak I quite like, and I think that, you know, the club seems to be quite keen on him as well. I think they've managed him really, really well, and I think he's been in and around the first team, and he's been training with the first team. He's been in that environment. So I think the next step for him now is, you know, getting more minutes off the bench and then maybe starting some Europa League games. So I think we'll see a lot of Ben Doak next season. And based on the little that we have seen so far, he looks a very promising player.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's been the forwards. I hope you've enjoyed that. We might do another area of the pitch, maybe look to evaluate that, but hopefully more coming in, like the others have said, in terms of midfield and defence, and we can do a bit more of evaluation. Looks like Liverpool are going to go in with those six or seven or however many you want to count them, and we'll see how they develop. We'll see whether it's enough, and we'll all, you know, be right or wrong in terms of our assessments by the end of the next year. I'm off to find the Jordan Rossiter train to see where it derailed exactly. But in the meantime, huge thanks to Steve Evans, to Robbie O'Neill, and to Mike Bancole. Have a lovely weekend. You boys have a lovely weekend. Everyone listening. And yeah, maybe we'll sign someone by Monday. Who knows?
Sports Social Podcast Network.